Well, hello. Welcome back to Esposito, the Espergenesis podcast. My name is John, formerly Jefferson Knight, and now your brand spanking new DM, or GM, or SM. I think SM makes... I'm like the Space Master. I'll be the Space Master for this season. Season 2. That's right, it's my world now, and I'll do what I like. I won't go on for a long time, just the usual things. Don't forget to check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, wherever you get your social media on. Don't forget to share us with your friends, with your family, with your pets, if they're particularly into sci-fi tabletop roleplay games. And leave us a review if you can, wherever you podcast listen. That's about all I'm going to say. There'll be more updates about what we're doing and the new characters and crap like that as we go along with season 2.
One last thing. On November 23rd, there's a game day taking place at Carlson Metro Center YMCA in Rochester, New York. And one of the things happening is a huge multi-table Espergenesis game, which sounds awesome. So, you know, if you're near Carlson Metro Center in Rochester, New York, go and check that out. The website is rochesteryMCA.org. Have a look. Why not?
And now, on with the show!
So, now recording season 2. Season 2! So, before we actually dive on into the story of season 2, before we actually start playing it, I would like to hear about your characters.
Welcome to season 2!
No, shut up. I've done that.
Oh.
In space! Space! Space!
Still!
It'd be weird if we weren't!
Sci-fi doesn't work very well, not in space. I'd like you to tell me... Oh, crap. I'm glad we've started the way we meant to continue.
This is great, not DMing. I've got a scotch. I don't give a shit. I'm ready to murder something.
Welcome to the shitpost, Tom.
Oh, man, I'm just going to be, like, Googling fucking memes.
I'm already channeling you, Tom. I've already got the side down.
You already got your head in your hands. We've not even started.
The worst bit of it is that I don't have any alcohol left in the house, so I'm drinking fucking Earl Grey whilst I'm doing it. I mean, it's classy.
I mean, it wouldn't be that rude if you had a semi on.
Call back to last season.
How is it? How do you not think it's the greatest middle class joke ever?
So, I would like to hear about your characters. So, we're gonna do a round robin. You can tell me about your characters. Don't tell anything that you don't want everyone to know about your character. If there's any like deep dark secrets that you wanna keep on the down low, don't not keep them on the down low. Tom, describe to us your very first Espergenesis character.
Yay. Okay, so my character is... how's everyone feeling about character voices?
I'm certainly going to try.
I mean, I'll probably start doing it and then just kind of filter out.
Mike, if you do what you did for all the way through season 1 and just occasionally do it, but not all the time, that'd be fine.
Yeah, okay, cool.
I mean, I think that's probably fair, but it's nice to be reminded that this character... Basically, this is... I want to revenge because I had to do so many fucking accents in the last season that I'm kind of looking forward to, like, calming down a little bit.
You're just going
to
perfect one.
Now, that is... I can't make that promise.
That's a strong word.
Perfect is a very, very strong word. I might hack away at one for a longer period of time than usual. Okay, so... My character goes by the name of Dumas Korriban. He is a... Should we just go with the details? Because we had a couple of details that we're keeping, not secret, but kind of close to our chest for the story's sake.
No.
Okay. So I'll skip out a few bits, but it's nothing major. It just helps with the story. So Dumas, he is a specialist, the space rogue, and he's had a fairly uneventful life for most of it. He's not really got a backstory. He's not a hero. He's not a legend. He's nothing of the sort. He is a fairly regular kind of guy. For almost a century, he was a chemistry teacher. And then with government educational cutbacks, he went into mining. He's quite a well-built guy. He's quite strong. And then when the mines dried up, the mine was closed and he was made redundant. So he joined the military. It seemed like the only stable job. Everything else he tried, he ended up becoming pretty redundant. So he joined the military, joined the tactical corps, doing sort of tactical specialist work, more computers based and science based than actual combat. But he's been through basic. He knows how to handle a gun, and he's pretty skilled with making things, chemistry, smithing, those kind of skills. So he's quite good with his hands. And on the surface of it, that'd be it really to him in terms of his story. He has a few other bits on the side. I won't talk about them too much yet, but he's no real faith to the government on his planet. They've never looked after him despite his literally, 100 or 200 years of service. They've never really looked after him. So he's got to the stage where he's absolutely just looking after himself. I think that's about all I can say, really, without giving anything away.
What was his race again?
Well, that's part of what I can't. I'm not giving away at this. That's hence the cagey, coy response. Me, John. As part of the story, I don't know anything about the story, just for the record, but to facilitate the story, I was a particular race.
Well, it was kind of that you were interested in being this particular race.
I mentioned it offhand, didn't I? Yeah.
And I was like, that's actually really cool. I want to build that in.
Yeah.
So what do you look like then?
We'll get to that.
Okay.
Fit.
Because you guys, the three of you, are going to meet up before you meet Korriban. Korriban, is that right?
Yeah, Dumas Korriban. He doesn't mind either.
All right. But also, because you guys all know this, but no one listening knows this, you're all starting at level 3 because I find levels 1 and 2 a bit dull, and I kind of want to explore a bit more of slightly higher level Esposito. But yeah, so that's Tom's character.
Esposito. He talks like this. He's got an accent like this, and he don't take no shite.
Okay.
He's going to talk like this. He's going to do Game of Thrones for an entire fucking season.
Dad, is that you?
Carl fucking Tanner.
All right.
Fucking legend in Gin Alley.
Aaron, tell me about Colm.
Well, yeah. So my dude's called Colm Hadnarjan, but everyone just calls him Hud. Everyone who kind of knows him is a scorched human. So he grew up on actual real Earth, the Seeds. He grew up in a section that used to be between sort of India and Nepal, at the foot of the mountains. But it's prone to just basically like really shitty like flash freezes and stuff like that. So he grew up pretty hard. He was orphaned at quite a young age because, it's still D&D, but in space. So, after he was orphaned, he, grew up a little rough, and eventually got taken into, like, sort of a kibbutzy kind of orphanage kind of thing, started stealing cars and things like that. And he really loves, sort of, flying and driving, anything that he can get behind the controls of. That's what he's about. And then after that, he ended up getting kind of press ganged into the Infinity Corps after he stole the wrong person's car. So he chose to go to the Infinity Corps rather than being sent to a labor camp. And he ended up spending around 8 years in the Corps, where he became a commando. He wanted to be a pilot, but they found that his natural aptitude was for sneaking around, blowing shit up, and generally kind of murdering people in inventive ways, which he's not too fond of.
After a mission went wrong, he got really quite badly disfigured. So all along the kind of left side of his face is sort of burned down to the bone, where you can actually see like part of the skull. But he still got his eyesight. Yeah, so he's kind of an older guy, late 40s, early 50s. He's got a big moustache. And like I say, he's like not great to look at. But yeah, he's been drifting around the last few years doing sort of private protection, security, bounty hunting, private investigation. He's just a little bit jaded, and he's had enough of rolling through life and hurting people, and he just wants to find a bit of meaning, really. Which is but he needs to do you know, a few kind of set himself up, and he's come across something which is put him in the path of these retrobates. So yeah, that's him.
Cool. Let's then go to Philly. Tom Owen.
Hi everyone. I'm not gonna give a description at the moment or a race for Philly. I think we'll find that out quite shortly.
Is it because he's a horse?
that is part of the joke of the name. But
he's a centaur.
Yes, he's a horse. No, he's just a horse. With psychic powers, so you can all hear him speak.
Mr. Ed.
Is it okay if I bring Unearthed Incarna into this, John? Make my own race. No, I'm joking. It's a.
I don't really know what to respond to that, Tom. Like, I know that you're not doing that already. So,
yeah, you already know.
Once for yes, twice for no.
So the main thing about Philly is he's a zealot. This is a callback to season one, and he's part of a cult Penguin. So he was there at the beginning when the cult was founded, and that kind of made him find some meaning in his life. He'd previously been the kind of person to just stay in his parents' basement and not get out at all, spending all of his time in the sim, playing online games. But that means he was there having stones chucked at him at the very beginning. And found new meaning in his life that day to spread the word of the great Plasticine Prophet. So he's been out in the universe. His parents are part of a very wealthy family, so he's quite well known. He's got the patrician background, which is like the space nobles, essentially. So his family's quite well known, and he's been riding off that money, or so he says, for the past few decades. Going around spreading the word of this penguin-based cult.
Just for anyone who hasn't listened to season one, what that is a reference to is the original murder hobo of the party in season one, Ozan.
Represent?
Yeah, originally he logged into the sim, which, again, if you've not listened to season one, that's the space internet. And he disguised himself as Pingu. And then kind of accidentally founded a cult. Like, there's really not much more to it than that. Like, he gave a sort of sermon. Actually, he was just telling people about events that had happened, but it kind of, you know, it spiraled. It became a religion.
As these things tend to do.
Yeah. Someone tells a story. Other people... Hang on. No, I'm not. Let's not go down that rabbit hole. Jeez. All right, cool.
Listen to season one. We need the numbers.
Listen to season one. Go back. It's a riot. There's some fine characters in there. Jefferson Knight, probably one of the best characters that you'll ever hear.
And the audio quality gets increasingly better.
It does. Like, if you really want to watch audio, hear audio quality increase.
In conclusion, please listen. We all desperately want to quit our real job.
I mean, I like my real job. I want to work 4 days a week and spend the day podcasting.
That would be nice.
Well, I'd like to quit my job.
All right. I'll tell you what.
Do it for me, Gid. Do it for me.
He needs this. Right, tell us about your guy. Girl, sorry.
Whoa, spoilers.
Sorry. tell us about your character, including any gender and or sex-related stories. Not stories. Well,
there's plenty of those, of facts.
No, I mean, sex is in the physical...
Act of lovemaking, yeah.
No. That's for our own private conversations. Jeez, come on.
So, my character is Aldora Altari, and she is an Eldori female, and she has two levels in Adept, which is like the sorcerer the space sorcerer, and she has one level in engineer. But effectively, she is the result of an affair between an Eldori general and a Lorendi general, her mother. She was captured by her father and interrogated, and they fell in love. And Aldora was a result of that. And then she fled. Her mother fled and left her with her father, who's a very cold, calculated man, who raised her very much like a boy rather than a girl, a tomboy. She lived on Ziva 3, which is a colony, an Eldori colony on the Outer Rim. And she always dreamed of escaping her life from that place. She felt constrained. She always looked to the stars. She always wanted to be a captain of her own ship. So one day, when her father came back and retired at the very grand age of 350, she decided it was time for her to leave. So she got on a skiff and left Ziva 3, but was fortunately picked up by a band of pirates in the Rim. And they took her on, and she became part of their crew. She ended up getting her own ship, Golden Rose, part of that kind of pirate crew, and had many, many years of plundering the Rim, so to speak. But then was betrayed by her manned man called, not a man, but a, is he a man? I forgot what I put it for him. Rickard Thorne is his name. Took the ship from her and left her to the authorities. Now, she was picked up by the Eldori authorities and then put in prison for 15 years, and she was branded as a pirate. She's quite charismatic. She has a good way of talking her way out. So in prison, she took well to that environment. She became a little bit of celebrity within the prison. As she came out 15 years later, it was a goal to get her ship back, the Golden Rose, that she lost so many years ago. That was the happiest time of her life, being free from kind of entrapment of her father. And her kind of motto is that you can't take the sky from her. And years pass a little bit, and doesn't find the rose she's been looking for. She turns to drink. She's become a bit of a joke in the criminal community. This kind of washed up pirate. She's about 156 years old now. People in the criminal underworld refer to her now as Dora the Explorer, and it's a bit of considered bad luck to have her on a job with because her chronic alcoholism becomes a little bit of a liability. But she always manages to escape like terrible situations and leaves the others to take the rap. She's quite wily and switched on, even if she is a bit of a drunk. But yeah, that's her.
So,
Space Jack Sparrow, and she sounds very much like Sparrow as well. So I'll attempt to do a little bit of a voice, and she enjoys slurring, drinking, something like this.
Excellent stuff. Right, so that's our merry band of men, Hobo. So, just a look. So what I'm going to do first is describe what's happened. I'm going to describe the setting of the universe now that Season 1's events have unfolded, and then I'll dive on in. The events surrounding the destruction of the Shattered Tower passed almost unnoticed into the annals of history. The Lorendi, not wanting to admit to any involvement in such a spectacular failure, held back from all-out war, settling themselves into the usual border conflicts with the Eldori. Many of the Venom-pained clones dispersed and went into hiding. Every now and then one would surface, and footage of the destruction of the Callistus would make the rounds, as well as a mention of the brave crew who stopped a threat to galactic peace before more lives were lost. The clone would then be imprisoned or executed, and things would settle down again. No one knew how many clones there were, but as long as they weren't too visible, no one particularly cared. Tensions between the Prometheans and the humans escalated, but again, no actual war started. An unsteady ceasefire maintained, despite the occasional raid and battle on outlying planets and small sectors of space. But what did happen is these conflicts divided the Silurian arc, with different powers taking different stances, and over time, tensions started to build, and the arc felt as though it were constantly on the brink of all-out war. Huge fleets would assemble and face off against one another, and then some diplomacy would take place, things would settle, but then the fleets would assemble elsewhere and the cycle would begin again. And so things continued. For a while, the people of the Ark held their breath, waiting for the inevitable conflict to break. But despite the threat being ever present, war never actually came, and so the people ended up carrying on with their lives, eyes and ears closed to the constant looming threat of death. Dora, Hud, and Philly, the three of you, through different channels, heard about a job. There was a company called Machinex, which is a subsidiary of one of the mega corporations, Genfex. They had a job looking for security. It was extremely well paid, and for your various reasons, you all accepted this job. There were some fairly strict conditions. There was a non-disclosure agreement that you had to sign, as well as a lot of waivers around, you know, loss of limb, loss of life, damage to self, damage to property. But you took the job, again, because the pay was incredible. For this sort of security job, like it didn't sound like a complicated job, but for some reason the pay was very high, and rather than ask questions about that, you just accepted it. You are each traveling alone. Like, none of you joined this job knowing anyone else that's on the job. The only requirements for it were that you are capable of carrying a weapon and that you have no ongoing medical conditions. But you still, despite the fact that it's security, you don't know what it is exactly that you're doing or where it is that you're going. So the compartment you're in on this cargo freighter is purely functional. There's a door at either end and two long benches that run down each side. The walls, floor, ceiling, and benches are all a cool gunmetal grey, and the lighting is stark, bright, fluorescent lighting. There's only two computer panels visible within the space, and those are each next to the doors, and it's just a simple comms panel to the pilot's compartment, or the cockpit, if you will. That's the other word for a pilot's compartment. You boarded the ship on the planet Riff about 12 hours ago. There has been at least one crucible jump since then, which means that at this point you could be literally anywhere in the known universe. So alongside you, apart from the three of you, so we've got Hud the human, Philly the... Did you want me to say Tom?
Yeah, I think it's fine to say now.
Yeah, I mean, you can see him. You know what he is. Philly the Kesh and Dora the Eldore. There's also two Prometheans, a Valna and another Eldore. So the Eldore has been sat very quietly the whole time, trying as best she can to avoid conversation and eye contact. The two Prometheans are sat chatting with each other and occasionally shooting the odd question out to the group. And the Valna, who is huge, he's got a metal leg, so he's missing one of his legs, and there's a replacement leg there. And he's also, he's got quite a significant scar across his face that goes over one eye, and there's an eye patch there. He's just sat there, just sharpening a sword. His only contribution to any of the conversation that's been going on is the Prometheans at one point asked him how he got the scar on his face, and he just sort of cocked his head, gave him a grin, and said, "Cooking accident," and then went back to sharpening his blade. There's also a very tall human woman who you all know to be called Chandra. She's in her late 30s, dressed in a smart, functional combat suit, and she's the only full-time employee for Machinex that is in this compartment. She's been stood next to the door into the cockpit since the journey started, and the panel next to her lights up and a voice comes over through the comms and says,
"Commander, 10 minutes to arrival."
So she presses a button on the comm panel, utters a word of acknowledgement that none of you can quite hear, and then she turns to you and says, "Listen up. We will be arriving at our destination soon. Everything you see and hear from here on in is considered confidential. As part of accepting this job, you have already signed a non-disclosure agreement, and believe me, Machinex and Genfex will ensure that if that agreement is breached, your lives will be torn apart. We are currently approaching the planet designated JKZX-12. As some of you may know, this planet is quarantined following the death of a Dendu colony several centuries ago. The planet remains in quarantine. You'll be working alongside a local crew to secure a delivery of materials and goods. Do not probe or ask questions. Follow their lead and do as you are told. Beyond that, you are to do nothing but ensure that our cargo is collected and brought back here. We will now flood the chamber with a gas that will immunize you to the plague and help you to adapt to the environment on the surface." And as she says this, a thick white gas pours down from the vents in the ceiling. The cloud seems odorless. Nonetheless, Marcellus, the Valna, scrunches his nose and holds back a sneeze. She looks across the room. Any questions?
Yeah, is this gas flammable?
No, it's not.
Fair enough. I light a cigarette.
When do we get the payment for this particular job?
Well, you have already received 20% of your payment up front. That is in holding accounts ready for you to collect upon return to Riff.
Right. Well, I can't remember signing the contract, so... She takes a swig of rum.
I would appreciate less drinking on the mission.
Right you are, Captain, and I salute her.
I'm a commander. Delightful. So you carry on for a little bit, and then the cloud slowly dissipates, and then you feel a slight rocking as the ship docks with something, and you can hear a hiss coming from the door at the rear of the cabin as the airlock pressurizes and the cabin door slides open. So pause for you guys. Korriban, today starts for you like most days do. You wake up on the surface in your apartment. Your alarm depolarizes the windows, allowing bright and constant sunlight to penetrate your home.
Ugh.
Do you want to talk me through your morning routine?
Korriban wakes up in his very small, quite tattered apartment and raises his hands above his eyes and lets out a bit of a, And the light literally just is awful to him. He rolls over and grabs some goggles off his nightstand and pulls them down over his eyes, blinks a few times, stands up. He's wearing like sort of boxers and a vest. He leans down into his cabinet by his bed, lights a huge cigar, which he puffs on for a couple of seconds.
First thing in the morning, that's grim.
Yeah, oh, it's his air. And then he flicks the television news on, gets up, has a bit of a stretch, gets himself ready. And it's a fairly normal day for him, I think. He doesn't do much. He just brushes his teeth, gets himself dressed, puts on his boots, attaches his wrist-mounted computer to his arm, and sets off for the day with he's feeling a bit stiff. He always feels a bit stiff first thing in the mornings, but he limbers up once he's got going. I think it's a fairly normal day.
Yeah, so what comes on in the news? There's not a lot going on. A couple of petty larceny incidents throughout the city. It's nothing particularly exciting. The only news report that's been coming up fairly frequently over the last couple of months is this asteroid storm that has been orbiting the sector around the planet. It seems to be getting closer, but it's not quite in range to cause any worries. But the fact that it's there and moving at the speed that it's moving is a little bit alarming. But there's no particular worries about it. There's just updates about what parts of the sector you can't fly through if you're going to go out flying about.
He doesn't do much flying about. He's been off planet a few times, but he never goes far.
It's just an update. It's because there's a news report. It's not just for you. This whole planet's news doesn't revolve entirely about you.
Whoa.
You set off for the shuttle flight to take you up to the station. You reach the shuttle and you run into one of your colleagues, a woman called Gelda. You've worked with Gelda for a few years, and the two of you ride up to the station together. You meet some of the night shift on their way out. So the shuttle docks at the station, airlock doors open, you walk in. The station's fairly small. It's jam-packed with tech. It's circular in shape, a bit like a disc with a corridor that runs around the circumference with three docking bays on. So there's a docking bay for the shuttle, there's a docking bay for the station's corvette, the Sifri, and there's a third docking port for visiting ships. Then there's a second inner corridor that goes again around in a circle that allows access to a med bay, an armory, a computer lab, and a small holding cell. And then you make your way into the center of the station, which is the hub, where all the information around the surrounding system, communications from the planet below are accessible. And there's a couple of desks in here. There's a small kitchen and a bit of a lounge space. And despite its constant use, because there is at least 3 to 5 of you in this shuttle 24 hours a day, or, you know, however many hours are in a day for this particular planet. But it's still, like, despite being really clean, it's still fairly homely. Like, you've got some posters and things up. And there's two other dwarves in there already. You recognize them, Beltrov and Tumlin. Beltrov is making himself a drink in the kitchen, and Tumlin sat staring at a readout on a display. Beltrov just turns to you both as you enter, because you are running a bit late. He says, "There's a lion for you two this morning, you lazy bastards." And Gelda just spits back, "Piss off, Dindu face."
Dumas lets a laugh out of that. He appreciates unnecessary belligerence. It's usually good-hearted, despite the fact it can sound quite aggressive.
And then Beltrov just says, "Well, the night shift got everything set up for the arrival today. Korriban, I'm with you on this one. We'll be babysitting the wide-eyed babies on the dark side."
Remind me, what have we got again?
What do you mean?
Who have we got coming down this time?
Oh, I don't know. Just some traders from the Ark.
I fucking don't know what we've got to be doing with them, to be honest. Right. Oh, right, get us a coffee.
She sets about making you coffee. And then you hear a slight alarm going off as this off-worlder's ship docks, and Beltrov turns to you and says, "Right, off-worlders are here. Time to lock it down." So you've done this a few times. So you and Beltrov head to the outer ring, and behind you, the lock system is engaged, so these huge metal barriers slide down, restricting access for the outer ring so that you can just access the outer ring, just access the docking ring. And as you approach the airlock door, the off-world docking bay slides open. Colm, Philly, and Dora, the three of you see two very short, stout figures that look incredibly unusual in proportion. And Tom, you see a ship full of bizarrely coloured and shaped off-worlders. You're kind of used to how weird they look, but they are definitely still weird.
I lean to Gelda and I say, "Never get any prettier, do they?"
"Hello, mates. How are you doing?" shouts Dora.
"Not here to make friends, man. Come on in. Got business to be doing. Whatever it is you're doing, I don't know. Get it done. Here to make sure you don't go snooping round."
"I always like to combine business with pleasure, you know. Would you like a drink?"
"Aye." I reach my hand out.
I pass him some rum.
"Oh, never too early. What've you got? Have a bit of a swig of it."
"It's like the most cheap-ass, disgusting rum that you would get in like a rank coffee on Rith."
"Oh, fucking Glens."
At this point, Chandra steps out and gives the two of you, like Beltrov and Korriban, a little nod. And then turns to the other seven of you and says, "Right, these two are looking after you today. Remember what I said, don't pry. If we receive a complaint, your payment will be halved." And then Beltrov gives you a quick wave, as in like, follow me wave, not just like, she's not like, "Oh, hello."
"Hello."
Just to indicate that you should follow her, and walks over to another airlock. You go through the airlock and you board this other ship, which is smaller than the freighter you arrived on, but there's a lot more space. And unlike anything the three of you have seen before, its design is sleek and kind of graceful. The corridors and walls are ebony black with lines of ruby and gold just sort of embedded and etched into it. Beltrov taps her ear and says to the comms, right, we're all aboard. We can get underway." And the ship sort of shudders ever so slightly, like an electric car starting. There's a sort of gentle sway that indicates that you've left the station. And she beckons you all to follow her into a central space with a bit of a lounge space and a briefing table in the center. And she indicates for you to follow her into there.
I sit down, look professional.
Dora goes over to the couch and throws herself on it, lying, and puts her feet up on the armrest.
Anyone else got anything they fancy doing?
Hud's going to take up sort of like a standing guard position, sort of like at the shoulder of
Beltrov.
I've forgotten a name. Yeah.
Cool.
Philly has a look around the room and the ship and says, finally, somewhere with decent aesthetics, and then takes a seat.
And Beltrov's like, "I'm glad you appreciate our design."
"Oh, I've seen better, but it's better than we've been on."
"Right.
Are all the others there with us?"
"Yeah, so the two Prometheans, the Valna and the Eldora, have all followed you as well."
"Okay, cool."
Just so you know their names, by the way, because you will have heard their names. You've been introduced to each other. The two Prometheans are Anthony and Sam. So that's a Promethean brother and sister. The Eldori is called Srivar. And the Valna, as I said before, is called Marcellus.
Wallace.
What?
Marcellus Wallace.
I think that is where I got the name from.
But... Does he look like a bitch to you?
He does not look like a bitch to you. Like I've already described him. He's missing a leg and he's got a huge scar across his face and he is built.
Better not try and fuck him like a bitch then.
Don't try and fuck him like a bitch. He'll throw you out of a window or an airlock just for giving his wife a foot rub.
Is that why you blew off one of his feet?
That was an intense fucking foot rub.
He paid some pretty cheap robots to give him a foot massage and it went horribly wrong.
It got a bit too vigorous.
It was just a very intense grip.
It is what they're known for.
If it was that intense a grip, just be glad it was a
Yeah, I mean, he was considering hiring them for that as well.
It could have been much worse.
He was relieved when he realized that he hadn't got in for that first.
He was relieved he wasn't relieved.
So you're all there. And Beltrov sort of, she presses a button on the table and a video, a 3D graphic of a section of planet surface is rendered, showing sort of the outskirts of what looks like a city, followed by a path through a valley, and then there's kind of a plain, but like with quite a lot of very large craters and some old ruined buildings, and then there's a mountain with a sort of a woods huddled around the base of the mountain, and then an entrance, like a doorway on the, like a fairly large doorway on the side of the mountain. And she says, "So we're going to be landing here outside this city and taking the path through the canyon, across the plains and to the mountain, where we will enter the mine. Some of us will enter the mine, some of us will stay outside of the mine, collect the supplies, and then head back to the LZ, board the ship, and be on our way. It's a very simple task. Some hazards to be aware of. There's some local beasts that may attack, may not. If they do, they won't put up much of a fight. They'll be discouraged if there's an appropriate show of force. There's some marauders. Now, the marauders come in two different categories, but the flavor's essentially the same. So there's some that don't like us trading with off-worlders such as yourselves. They'll be there to kill you. They'll probably take the supplies too, but they're less fussed about it. And there's the black market dealers. Some of them, they're out there to take the supplies, but rest assured, they'll kill you the same. There's some electromagnetic storms on the surface that we need to be careful of. They will fry you. They will melt you. And there's some seed spawn. Heaven forbid, a seed spawn should show up.
Dumas shudders at the mention of seed spawn. You see him actually cringe a bit at the mention of them.
Yeah, Hud's eyes sort of narrow at the mention of seed spawn as well.
Yeah, you've definitely come across seed spawn before. And you are well aware that they are nothing to be dismissed lightly. And suddenly for you, the reason that the pay is so high, just at the potential threat of Seaspawn, the reason the pay is so high suddenly makes sense.
Yeah. I put my hand on the table and I say, how likely are we to meet a Seaspawn out there? Because we are not equipped for that.
Oh, I don't know. We've seen some Seaspawn off in our time. But,
what's a seed spawn?
I mean, you seem to know what seed spawn are, Mr. I wish I could describe you a bit more, but I don't know what you are. The one that just said about seed spawn.
Well, yeah, they're basically, I sort of like shudder. They're everyone's worst nightmare, and then you kind of make them worse.
Aye, that's true.
Delightfully vague.
Mutations, they are, mutations.
Abominations, excellent.
Aye, they used to be humans, dwarves and Dendu or whatever they were, but now, God, there's something else. Sorium sent them funny and they'll flay skin off you as soon as eat you.
Ah, nothing a little fire won't sort out.
Don't underestimate them. I've seen many a friend taken down by seed spawn. Auras they are, auras. You see one of them, you run.
Someone will be running.
Someone will be surviving.
I turn to the Prometheans and I sort of whisper to them, if you want to live, stay away from that kid.
They give you a fairly knowing nod. Like, they are well aware that someone that goes into any fight with a seed spawn in such a cavalier attitude might not live. That's more or less the briefing you get. And then you look out the viewport in this particular part of the ship. As you're flying over the planet, you can see that in the distance there's an enormous asteroid field, the one that you've heard about a bit. Seems to be lazily drifting through space. And as you approach the planet's surface, you fly over this large, like this enormous glistening city. There's huge swathes of very lush green land. You can see little shuttles flying between crystalline structures. Like, it looks a little bit like the Citadel in the first Mass Effect game. You know, when you go into the courtyard bit where it's fancy as hell. And you can see birds flying in formation. That you could see the occasional herd of six-legged livestock just roaming through open fields. It looks a bit like a paradise. And then you fly over the coast. You start passing over this ocean that borders the continent that you're flying over. Then you start approaching the dark side of the planet. At which point, once you arrive at a landmass on the dark side, it is vastly different. The scenery takes on a sort of purple shade. There's dark, almost black plants that litter the landscape. There's huge rock formations that sit amongst remains of settlements and occasional bigger structures. There are these massive craters. Some of them are full of quite a dark liquid. And occasionally you see isolated figures moving through the barren wasteland. But they tend to scurry out of sight when they see the ship. So you aren't able to get a good view of what they are. And the only evidence that they were there in the first place is a small cloud of dust that mingles with the condensation of their breath. As you continue flying, a small layer of frost starts to form on the edge of the viewport. And then ahead of you see a large ruins with a city that's been long since destroyed and abandoned. And the ship flies over the city. And again, you see what could once have been a really amazing looking metropolis. But all the structures and sculptures are sort of deformed and melted. And there's sort of, you can see evidence of plant life growing through cracks and sort of tearing down structures. There's half-collapsed buildings and crashed vehicles in the streets. And again, you see these sort of shadows moving in and out through alleyways and across streets that you never quite manage to see what they are. And then the ship sort of settles on the outskirts of the city and powers down, and all of the lights go off, and there's just a sort of purple glow of emergency lighting. Baltrov takes you towards the gangway that will take you out of the ship, and she hands you all thermal suits to protect you from the environment, and then leads you outside. And despite the thermal suit, it's incredibly cold. It's a bit of a shock to the system. And as Baltrov is the last one off the ship, the plank retracts and the ship noiselessly lifts off and speeds away back into orbit. And looking around, you can see the silhouette of this city about half a mile away. And in the other direction, the path descends down into that canyon that you saw on the map with dark purple rocks rising up on either side. Beltroff sets off in that direction, not looking to see if anyone's following. It's sort of up to you what you do. Can someone roll a d6 for me?
I got a 3.
Cool.
But come on, follow this one. And I set off after Beltrov.
Okay.
I'm going to set up as well.
I'm going to draw my shotgun and... What's the Valner's name again?
Marcellus.
I say to Marcellus, hey, can you... how's your sense of smell?
Good.
Well, do you think you'd be able to pick it up if it's trying to sneak up on us if you're downwind?
Maybe. I mean, it's a fairly new environment for me.
Okay.
A lot of weird smells, but I'd probably notice a new smell.
Fair enough. You protect our rear. Grab one of the Prometheans, and I'll run up the front, take point.
And he looks at you a little bit unsure, because, you know, he is this like 7 foot lion essentially with a huge gun, and you're a human. And he's like, weighs you up a little bit, and then gives you a nod and walks back, taps on Sam's shoulder, and she follows him to the back to keep an eye on the rear.
Cool. So yeah, I sort of jog up to the front, level peg with Deltrov.
All right. Anyone else doing anything in particular?
Can I, as we're walking, speak to Schreiber?
Yep.
All right, mate. Where do you hail from?
Then she looks at you, kind of narrows her eyes, and then just walks slightly faster.
I keep the pace. I'm from a little planet called Ziva 3, you know, the Eldori settlements there. Are you from Eldori? Surrounding area?
She just turns to you and says, no. And then stops talking to you again.
I just pat her on the back. Yeah. I like you, mate. I'm going to stick by you.
And then she turns to me and says, if you touch me again, I will break your hand.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful relationship.
I sincerely hope you die on this planet.
Excellent.
Please stop talking to me. Thank you.
I say to Beltrov in Dwarven, eh, why do we even bring these lot along, eh? We're perfectly capable of getting the merchandise out.
And she yells back, but in common. Oh, really? You think that if a seed spawn comes on us? Or a group of marauders that want us to die?
I could take...
Fuck off.
I just sheepishly go back to myself, walking with my gun. Yeah, could take him, mutter under my breath.
You're walking into the canyon, huge, dark walls rise on either side, and the air gets even colder as you descend into the heart of it. It's only about 15 feet wide. As the ground begins to rise ahead of you, and the canyon walls begin to shrink a little bit, you can see this. There's just one figure stood in the distance. He's not hiding, he's just stood in the center on his own.
Can we recognize the silhouette? Like any species from the silhouette?
Roll a quick perception check.
Don't think that's my speciality. It's not.
Not a hard one.
3.
You're not quite. Definitely humanoid.
Let me roll a perception check. Oh, natural 1. First roll of season 2. Guys.
You think it might be a rock.
What's this bloody rock up here? In the middle of the bloody road.
And as you sort of approach, you like the figure starts to become a little bit clearer. And you can see there's a dwarf stood in front of you. And he just says, well, well, well. What have we here? Couple of traitors and some off-worlders. Tom was, I'd give you this spiel. You don't belong here. This is our world and our minds, blah, blah, blah. Get gone and we'll leave you gone. But I know you paid too much to listen to that shit. I know you won't go. So here's the thing. We'll probably gun you down, unless you do feel a mighty urge to stand down and run away. Traitors accepted, you die no matter what.
Hey, we're just...
I'll give you a count of 3.
We're just trying to make a living. Not wrong with that.
I mean, you say that. Not wrong with that. But then, look at this whole half-hour planet. Wasted, destroyed, from people trying to make a living with off-worlders, isn't it?
That's nothing to do with these cunts. Sorry, I shouldn't say cunts. But... that's nothing to do with them. That's Dendu, that is. That's nothing to do with this.
Off-worlders are off-worlders.
Aye. I'm half tempted to agree with you. But we all got to make a living, haven't we?
Look, mate. Absolutely. I mean, look, you're here. You want to make a living. We want to make a living. It's all, you know, one big
happy situation. If you just step aside, then we'll go on our merry way. Then nobody has to die here today. And you won't even realize or recognize that anything happened here today. Just, you know, turn a blind eye and whatever. Huh?
He sort of snorts and spits and says, see, the thing is, though, we're all making a living, but you're making a living off of us.
Well, look, I mean, I'm paid by a different organization. You know, it's outsourced and they outsource to somebody else, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You don't care about the things that we're going to pick up. Like, you just want to make some trouble. And I get that. I understand.
No, you don't get it. I'm a patriot, you see.
Right.
Whilst this guy's talking to Aldora, can I cast Beguile on him?
Yes, you can. What does that do?
It's basically Charm Person. It's a wisdom saving throw, or he's charmed by me.
Okie dokie. I need to find his stats. He has stats already, by the way, just so you're aware.
John, while this is happening, can I do a perception check to see if there's like anyone sort of in hiding or like anyone in the surrounding area trying to ambush us?
You certainly can.
Cool.
So what's the DC on the wisdom save, Tom?
It's not hard, it's 12.
I mean, you got a 6.
Yeah.
I got an 18 on the perception check.
All right, so yeah, you can see there's two figures that have started approaching from behind. And you can see as you turn around to look, Marcellus sees you do that and looks closer and can see them. And him and Sam both raise their weapons. And there's another two that are sort of starting to emerge from either side of this guy.
Here now. There's no need for this.
Do we all have combis?
Yeah.
I'm going to get on the comms and say, we're being surrounded. Everyone take the defensive positions.
Okay, so I'm going to carry on speaking to the guy who's charmed by me. Right, come on, stand down. Like I said, we're just passing through. We're not causing any trouble. We're just going to get some scrap and we're going to take it back to the city.
Roll a persuasion.
Okay, so I have advantage on that because he's charmed, I think.
Yeah.
That's a good job. Even then, it's not great, to be honest. 11.
Now listen. I can tell you're a good bloke. You're only doing this job because you need a job. I get that. Like, government's been a bit shit recently.
Aye, that they have.
Like, I get that. But here's the thing. We really hate off-worlders. Whole reason the government's fucked up, whole reason for that, is off-worlders came here and ruined our planet. So I'm sorry, but I cannot let you pass.
Not these off-worlders, though.
Don't matter. Off-worlder's an off-worlder. And he raises up his rifle and he cocks it. Now, I want you all to understand, this is not personal, but it must be done.
Can I quickly cast mental missive on this guy? Which means I can whisper to him and he's the only one that can hear.
Yeah, you can do that as everyone rolls initiative, but go ahead.
Ah, for fuck's sake. Okay. And I'll say to him, look, mate, I'll cut you in on the deal for this potential scrap. The dwarf here, he's lying to you about what it is. It's more important, this material, than what he says. And I think we can make a killing out of it, so to speak. And not a killing in terms of killing each other right here, right now, but a killing.
And he narrows his eyes again and says, get out my fucking head. And raises his rifle to fire.
I jump quickly to the side.
Okay. What's everyone's initiative then?
I was on a 19.
That's a 12 for Philly.
I wasted my critical. No. I got a 22 in total.
And Dora?
7!
Okay. What I'm also going to do, guys, because I don't want to control 9 NPCs, I'm going to give you each another character control. Is that right?
Yeah, can I get Mike's?
No. No, you can't.
Is Dora already annoying?
I shoot myself in the head.
all right, so Tom, I'm going to give you Beltrov.
Cool.
But who wants Marcellus?
Yeah, I'll go with that.
All right. Who wants Anthony, the male Promethean?
I'll take Anton Dordek.
Okay. Fuck. Why didn't I call Dordek?
I mean, it was going to happen.
By the way, these guys are hard as nails. Just so you know, you get to enjoy playing with a bitch in character. Oh, yeah. Beltrov, by the way, has been carrying what looks like a great sword, but it also has the ability to cock and turn into a gun. This is a direct ripoff from Farscape. She has got a Coulter blade. Aaron, would you like Sam or Srivar?
I will take Sam.
Then I shall be Srivar. And every other fucker in the game. I did this, though. This was my choice. So, there are your characters that you are controlling. Do you want to roll initiative for them as well?
18, Beltrov.
That's 19 for Ent.
Sam's on a 12.
Marcellus is on a 15.
And shit for Srivar. Okay, so the situation is this. You are in a canyon. There's a couple of 5-foot rocks. Like, there's two ahead of you that could potentially be used as cover. But for the most part, this is a 15-foot wide canyon. There are three figures ahead of you, two behind you. Hud.
Okay, so how close am I to the guy who's been speaking?
He's about 30 feet away from you.
Are they up? Are they up at the top of the valley, or
no? No one is overshadowing you.
Okay, cool.
Like no one's overhanging. Like no one's on the top of it. Rises to leave the canyon. Like the canyon's rising up. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah, but like, you wouldn't have to like climb or anything to.
No, there's no climbing involved. It's this pathway.
Cool.
Okay, so is there any cover near me?
About 25 feet from you, so 5 feet from this guy,
mm-hmm.
just outside of melee range, there is a rock that you could take cover behind.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to shoot him with my shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
I've got these things called combat stunts. Just give me a second. I had to turn the page because I'm an idiot. So I'm going to do a flash burst. That is a 20 non-natural.
That'll hit.
4 points of damage. So I've got to add the stunt die to the attack's damage. So that's another 3 damage as well. And the target must make a dexterity saving throw or become blinded until the end of its next turn.
Okay. God damn it, my dice are shit today. What's the DC on that?
DC is 13.
Yeah, he fails that.
So he's blinded until the next turn. And then I'm going to run over and get some cover from that rock.
Okay, cool.
Actually, no, I'm not. I'm going to run over to him and try and grab him. I'm using an action surge, so I can do one additional action on top of my regular action and a possible bonus action.
So you're going to try and use your action to grapple him. All right, so strength contest, you have advantage.
Okay, 16.
He got a 22.
Ooh, okay.
So you charge forward to try and grab him, and like he took about half a step back from the actual impact of the shot, but then he raises one of his hands to his face as a response to being blinded. You grab onto him, and he just manages to push you back.
Cool.
Like letting out a bit of a "Argh!" and then he swears very loudly. Okay, next up is Corriban.
Is anyone stood near each other in a group?
As in them?
Yeah.
No. So there's the guy that you've been talking to, then about 10 foot back, slightly to the left, there's another guy, and then about 15 foot back from him is another guy. And then behind you, they're about 15 foot apart.
Okay, cool. Is Aaron grabbing one of them?
He's just been pushed off of one of them.
Okay, but he's next to him.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to keep it simple. I'm just going to draw my auto pistol and fire at the one who's just pushed Aaron off.
Yeah, the guy that's blinded, so you have advantage on that.
Excellent. Good, because one of those was a crit fail. 20 non-natural.
That'll hit him.
Excellent. So that's got sneak attack damage, has it? What? Sorry, Deft Strike. Deft Strike.
Yeah, it's not Sneak Attack. It's Space Sneak Attack.
Oh my god, great roll. I just rolled 3 sixes. Fuck.
That's amazing.
That's amazing. Ah! I shit you not, I just rolled 3 sixes. That is my favorite. So that is 20 points of damage to him.
20 total.
20 total. You want more?
Beast.
I'm just checking. So you very quickly just pull out your auto pistol and fire a single shot at him. And he's pushed Aaron back, and he's like, it's an easy shot for you to make, wide open. And it digs right into like the top of his chest, like almost splitting his clavicle. And he doubles over and lifts his hand up to it and lets out another huge roar as you can just see blood pouring out of this wound.
That's not the first guy who I charmed, was it?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, it is. Oh, damn it. I mean, actually, I don't know how that affects charm. I assume that breaks the charm, but because that, you know, I would take that as aggression.
Yeah, I would. I'd frown upon someone that
I mean,
shot me.
To be fair, for 3 sixes, that is worth it.
Yeah.
Is there anywhere I could take any cover?
Yeah, there is another rock that is about 10 foot back from you on the right.
Bear in mind, I can dash as a bonus, so if there's anywhere within like 50 feet.
The thing is, to get to anywhere beyond that, you'd run past people that were attacking you.
Okay, cool. I'll just run and dive behind and take cover behind the rock that is there.
Okay. Anthony's turn. Who's got Anthony?
I've got Anthony. So, and they're not terribly close to each other, but is there anywhere I can get a group of them with about 30 feet of each other?
Yes. There's two of them that are behind you, and the three that are ahead of you are all within 30 feet of each other. Well, but bear in mind that HUD is also there.
Okay, well, Anthony's going to take the more sensible option and head towards the two that are together.
Yep.
And he's going to let loose with a concussive burst.
Exciting.
Each target in the area must succeed on a DC 14 constitution saving throw.
Okay. Yeah, so the one on the right didn't succeed, the one on the left did.
So that was 18 force damage, but halved if they succeeded.
God damn, you guys deal a lot of damage.
That's pretty badass. Quite jealous.
Okay, cool. Then it is the turn of Beltrov.
So Beltrov's just going to run up to the blinded one.
Yep.
And he's just going to try and cut him to pieces with the Coulter Blade.
Ace, go for it.
So it's three attacks with Beltrov, because apparently he's fucking nails.
She
is nails. The first one's a crit.
Oh, fuck. That guy's just going to be gone, isn't he?
The second one is a 21.
Okay.
And the third one's a 20 non-natural.
They all hit.
This is ridiculous damage. The crit is 15 damage. Oof. The second one, 7 damage, and the third one is 7 damage, so 28 damage in total. The cultist.
Yeah, she just swings this blade at him 3 times and takes huge chunks of. Is like you see bits of armor going flying. You see sprays of blood that like flick against the canyon wall. Like is messy, and this guy stumbles back, and you can see like he's down on one knee, but he is still there, like clutching at his wounds. Trying to shield himself, but he just doesn't know where anything's coming from. Damn, I thought he'd last longer than that. He is still going, but he is definitely looking bloody as hell. Next up is Marcellus.
Okay, so Marcellus was at the back.
Yeah.
And there's two at the back, is there?
Yeah, there's two at the back.
He's going to go for the one that Anthony didn't hit. Did he hit both of them?
He damaged both of them, but they're also still going.
Yeah, he's just going to go to the nearest one, take out his great blade, and attack 3 times. Because, again, this guy's hard as nails.
Yeah, these guys are bitching.
Depends how I roll with them, though.
Yeah.
First attack is probably going to miss. 11.
Yeah, that misses.
17 on the second.
That'll hit.
And 18 on third, so I'm guessing that hits as well.
Yeah.
18 points of damage.
Okay, excellent. So he charges up to one of the ones that had just been hit by this concussive shot. And again, just let loose. Like, the guy manages to step to one side with the first one, but kind of exposes his back and gets clipped across the back. And then Marcellus just sticks the sword like through his shoulder and then pulls it away. And the guy is like leaning against the wall again, looking pretty hurt and like clutching onto his shoulder.
Does Marcellus scream, "What does Marcellus like?" as he swings?
No, actually, he just lets out a laugh as he charges forward. Like, you can tell that he's in his element here. This is what he loves to do. Philly, it's now your go. Gosh, this is a long fight, just in terms of a lot of combat, a lot of people. I regret everything.
Philly's had a big smirk on his face as he could see things were clearly going to go south. So he summons his sword to his hand, where it appears, and he charges forward against the closest dwarf.
Where was Philly? Was Philly at the front or the back?
No, actually, he would have gone towards the front, isn't he?
Right, so the nearest one to you is the blinded one that's already pretty badly burnt.
I'm still alive, but I'm very badly burnt.
He does like burning. Is the one who's slightly less injured nearby?
Yeah, there is one guy that is looking fairly healthy, actually, who is about 10 feet back. And you won't get an opportunity attack from running past the blinded guy because he's blind. He doesn't know you're there.
That is always a bonus. Fantastic. So he's going to run to that one. And whilst he's charging forward, as a bonus action, he embeds his blade with a magical effect. Sorry, technical effect.
A scientific effect.
Scientific effect. And charges forward. Leave some for me. And takes a strike at this guy.
Cool, roll and attack.
17.
That'll hit, and like this guy looks kind of terrified as this exuberant-looking Kesh that's huge just charges at him, lifts his sword in the air, and leaps down. Yeah, roll damage.
12 damage.
12 damage.
Plus 2 to my attack because of my fighting style. So the Gravison Strike... Powerful gravity field appears at the point of impact, and the target must succeed on a strength saving throw or be restrained. So that'll be a DC 13 saving
throw. Okay. Oh, you got a 17.
Oh, that wasn't as fun as I was expecting. Never mind, that's all.
That's all right. Next up, it's Sam's go.
Sam's going to take two pot shots at the one that Marcellus isn't fighting.
Right, yeah, okay.
And so 15 to hit with the first one.
That'll hit.
That does 6 damage on the first hit.
Okay.
And then I think she misses with the second hit. You only get 6.
Yeah, that won't hit him.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And then it is Dora.
All right, all right. So who's still alive?
None of them are dead.
But the guy that... she's a bit irked that he didn't take that deal. She's going to try and Psy Blast.
All right, you've got advantage on this because he's blind.
Fabulous. 18 plus something.
That'll hit.
23. 1d10 psychic damage coming his way.
Sexy.
And that's 8 points. 8 points of psychic damage.
Cool. So, like, he's down on his knees, and then you fire this Psy Blast at him, and no one can see anything that happens. But you see, like, he looks like he's been impacted slightly. Like, he rears back a little bit, then he grabs his head and just starts screaming, and like falls down into a fetal position and is just there screaming in pain. Anything else?
Is he still up?
He's still going. Like, he, you can tell he's not going to last very long.
Okay, I'm going to use a bit of engineer that you will all remember from season 1. I'm going to try a coordinated attack.
Do you have a sassy droid too?
Yeah, he's called Salty.
Nice.
Salty the drone. Yeah, I'm going to send him out and he makes an attack. Do I get advantage on this?
Yep.
Oh, no. Damn it, Salty. That was a 10.
That's not going to hit.
God damn. Come back here, Salty. Like, give him a little slap on the nose.
What does he look like?
Just a giant flying nose.
He looks like, you know, Power Rangers. You know that annoying little ay.
Oh yeah.
His head, but flying.
Amazing.
Yeah, I was imagining a power.
So, like, batteries not included. Oh, come on, guys. Batteries not included.
No, like, I got it. I was waiting for Mike to respond.
Like, the 1987 Spielberg film. It's a classic.
Classic.
That's very specific.
It's fucking Spielberg. It's like, it's a thing.
Iconic. It's a great film.
It's a fucking brilliant film. Is that my favorite film?
All right. Then Srivar's going to have a go. Now it's my
time. Can I get into cover, though?
There isn't really any cover to take.
There's nothing left.
I just run away, 30 feet away from everything.
All right. I mean, they are in front of you and behind you. Running into the middle more?
Yes.
All right. Using bodies as cover.
And I do like a Jack Sparrow kind of waving my hands as I run.
Nice. Cool. At this point, Srivar is just going to lift up a grand blade and charge to one of the two at the back, the one that Marcellus went for as well. Yeah, she's just going to swing this grand blade a couple of times. And she manages to connect with him pretty solidly the first time, but just clips the side of the canyon the second time. And there's like a shower of dust and rocks that get sent flying. And yeah, you can see there's like a little spray of blood that mingles with the falling dust and rocks. And then you can see like these guys that were attacking you, they were a bit caught off guard by the ferocity of your... But they managed to sort of recover themselves. The guy on the ground who is just so, so, so weak is just going to lift up his rifle and spray blindly in the direction of Hud, bearing in mind that Hud's the one that sort of really took him down a peg. So attacking, but with disadvantage because he can't see anything. Hud, what's your AC?
13, but I can use a stunt dice to do a... Oh, wait, no, it's only for a weapon attack. Never mind.
It's all right, neither of them will met. Both times, like, he just sprays wildly and there's just like this crashing into the side of the canyon walls. At that point, guy who has been attacked by Philly is going to attack back, going to pull out a long blade. What's your AC, Philly?
It's 18.
Oh, just hits. Oof. With an 18. You take 7 points of damage, and then he's going to swing at you again, and he definitely hits that time.
Uh-oh.
And you take 18 points of damage.
Holy shit.
So he knocks you off guard, and then the sword just slides into your side. As it goes through, it freezes parts of your inside and then tears them away as the blade keeps going in and then pulls out again. And it's very painful. You don't enjoy it.
You made me bleed my own blood.
The two behind, so one goes for Marcellus and misses, and then he goes for him again and also misses. And the other one is going to go for Srivar. That'll hit. And the second one, yeah, just about. Srivar takes a bit of damage, but is more or less fine still. You made me bleed my own blood. That's definitely a Simpsons reference.
That definitely was.
Then the last guy, who's not really got stuck in yet, he runs forward and puts his hand on the back of the guy that's crouched over on the floor, who's just fired blindly, pulls out something from his belt and gives a quick syringe injection, as opposed to a not syringe injection. He doesn't have hypersprays, they're not that advanced. Yeah, and he's feeling a little bit better. He still doesn't look super healthy, but like you can see, like his vision clears and he starts to steady himself and stand back up. And then we're back to the top of the order. So back to Hud.
I'm going to try and grapple him again.
All right. You don't have advantage anymore. So it's just a straight strength check. He got a natural 20 the first time, by the way.
Okay. Did better this time. I had 18.
Yeah, you, like, as he stands himself up, and like you can see he's sort of he's feeling better, but he's still unsteady, and you just grab him and you successfully have him grappled.
So I grab him and I want to like have him in kind of like a half Nelson.
Right.
I pop my wrist blade and I hold it to his throat and I shout, fucking like bellow, "Enough! Enough! Drop your weapon or I'll cut his throat."
Nice. Do you want to roll an intimidation?
Do I get advantage because I've got collateral?
Yeah, I'll give you advantage. That's a pretty strong move.
That is a 17.
All right. Anything else? Is that the end of your go?
Can I say anything else?
No, I think you've used up your words.
Fair enough. I'm just holding my wrist blade to this guy.
Yeah.
This short guy.
Okay. Next up, we have Anthony.
Is there any sort of noticeable effect from what's just been said?
You do notice that a couple of them, you see them, they turn in the direction of it a bit, but they are also right up in it with people, so they're not lowering their guard necessarily.
Okay, cool. I think Anthony's going to keep firing. So how far away is he from the other two at the ones he was targeting earlier?
He'll be within running distance of them.
Okay. I think he's just going to fire then his microcannons at the closest of those two.
Oh, shit. I forgot about the microcannons. They're badass.
They are pretty badass. Although that's a terrible roll on my part. So that's an 11 first attack.
This shot just explodes into the side of the canyon wall and there's a fairly large crater left where it hit. And like the guy that you shot at, he goes a bit pale as this impacts in the wall next to him.
Excellent. As the shock makes blood drain from his face, second shot's going to follow up there. And that also misses as well.
That one's going to hit over his head. He ducks down as he gets showered with chunks of rock.
I'm doing Anthony bad here.
That's fine. He didn't deserve it, really. Next up is Corriban. Sorry, I missed you the first time, Corriban.
That's okay. I'm used to it. So, yeah.
That was a bit of revenge there, Tom.
Yeah. See, it's hard, isn't it? You see, all this.
Yeah.
I'm behind cover, aren't I?
Yeah, you are.
I'm going to use my cunning action possible.
To hide?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can do that. You're going to have disadvantage. The chaos and the fact that you are behind cover is going to help, but the cover only protects you one way, so it's still like, you can do it.
Just make myself less conspicuous then.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I've rolled the same thing twice. So 10.
Okay.
So, you know, it's nothing great. With my actual action, I'm just going to take my pistol and I'm going to ready an action to fire at anybody who doesn't acquiesce with the instruction to stand down from Hood. So if anyone looks like they're not complying with Hood telling people to stop fighting, then I'm going to shoot them.
Mm-hmm.
If it happens at the same time, I'll give priority to anyone who I can get a sneak attack on.
I mean, yeah, you'll have a sneak attack on pretty much anyone that you attack.
Cool. In that case, yeah, I'm just going to ready an action to fire on the first person who doesn't comply with Hood.
Cool. Beltrov.
Oh, that's me as well.
That is you as well.
Beltrov's by the blinded guy, isn't he?
Yeah, she is.
She. Is the blinded one the one that Aaron's grabbing?
Yeah, he's not blinded anymore, but that is the one.
Well, that's how I'm identifying. Okay, Beltrov's going to drop her... Actually, no, sorry, not drop, because it's the same thing. She's going to cock her Coulter blade and take the same. She's going to ready an action to shoot on the first person who shows aggression after not complying with Hood's instructions.
Okay, cool. Then we're going to go to Marcellus.
Marcellus, yes. So he is, whilst maniacally laughing, going to continue hacking at this guy in front of him. Three attacks with a great blade in him. First one, 24 to hit.
Yeah.
Second one is a 7, so I guess that wasn't it. And then the last one probably misses as well on a 10.
Yeah, first one definitely hits.
All damage for... Ooh, that's nice. 11 plus 2, 13 points of damage on that guy.
Marcellus this time just pulls back his sword and sticks it straight through this guy, and like you can hear it embedding into the rock behind him, and the guy just sort of grabs the sword, grabs part of Marcellus's mane, and then just sort of goes limp, and like there's just this patch of bloody fur on Marcellus's mane now. That guy is deadsies.
He's going to go pull the sword out and get the face of the other one at the back.
Okay.
Is it like Lurtz from Lord of the Rings?
Yes, a little bit like that. Okay, then we've got Philly.
Philly's pretty wounded at the moment. We use the rig expansion, so it's another tech-based ability. So as a bonus action, you can place a personalized target marker on the enemy, which gives me advantage on attacks for a minute.
Nice.
Space Slayer's Mark. But it's still called Slayer's Mark. I know it's Hunter's Mark, isn't it?
It's actually more like Abjure Enemy, which is a Oath of Vengeance a thing for a paladin.
Space Hunter's Mark.
No, because Hunter's Mark actually exists in...
And you get more damage with Hunter's Mark, don't you?
Mm.
Anyway, it's technicalities. So, yeah, you're going to do that. And then make an attack with advantage. John, your new dice hates me.
Yeah.
That's a natural one.
Ah.
But thankfully, an 18 on the other die.
Nice.
So that'll be 23 to hit.
That'll hit.
Excellent. And I'm also going to infuse that.
Which guy are you hitting, sorry?
The one who stabbed me up.
All right, cool.
One with the freezy cold blade. And just before I stab him, I'm just going to grit through my teeth and say, "You bloody peasant." And then make the strike. So that's 10 damage from the blade itself.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, nice. So that's 8 and 13 radiant damage. Of course it is.
So it's 10 damage with the blade and then another 13.
That's right, and then another 13 radiant.
Okay. Nice. So as you hit this, just this flash of light that comes out of your blade as it sinks in. And there's just a second as he stood there blinking at you, and then he just falls backwards with, like, there's a little bit of smoke rising up from the wound. So he's also dead. At that point, it is Sam's turn.
Yep, I'm going to do the same as Tom. I'm going to ready an action for anyone who's not going to stand down.
Okay. Sam then goes to Dora.
Yeah, seeing the situation play out, she's going to ready an action to cast Psy Blast. Can you ready a spell? You can't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, not spell, a talent. If they don't comply, she will use that.
Okay, cool. Srivad's going to do the same and just bring her sword up to the one remaining guy at the back of the canyon. Bring her sword up to his throat and ready to attack if he doesn't do as he's told. At which point, the guy that's been grabbed by HUD just goes, "Oh, whoa, 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 whoa. Everyone calm down. Stop what you're doing. Everyone calm down. All right, chaps. All right. I can see you've made your point. You win. We'll go. We'll leave you be. But we'll remember this. And next time you come back, we're going to be here."
I pull him closer to me and I say, "You stupid motherfucker. You better remember this. You remember this is the luckiest day of your life. Take your injured, take your dead, and get out of here. If I ever see you again, I'll kill you myself."
Aye, but drop your weapons first.
And they all just throw down swords that they're carrying and like take their guns out of the holsters. One of them's got like a rifle strapped across his back. He just lays it down. The guy, the medic that had healed the guy before just sort of unclips his light pistol and lays that down.
All right, you best remember this. Remember there's easier marks. Now sling your hook and fuck off.
Very, very bad idea letting these guys go and they say we just put an end to it here. This could come back to bite us.
I think that's a good plan.
They surrendered. Words got to mean something.
Yeah, there's enough out here to kill us and them without us wasting time on each other. It's done now.
Nice.
Let them go.
The lead dwarf, as they're walking back, they're heading back towards the landing zone. He's backing away and he says, "I'll remember this. And next time, we'll be back in much greater numbers."
That sounds like a win-win.
I shoot by his feet.
You guys, fuck, crazy son of a bitch.
See that you do, lad. See that you do.
And he looks at you again and says, "Traitorous fucking bastard." And then he turns and walks off.
Just doing a job. Just doing a job, lad. Did he drop anything decent?
It's all fairly standard weaponry, like just an auto pistol, a couple of long blades, and some... Yeah, there's a light pistol, combat knife, a couple of long blades, and a couple of short rifles.
Yeah, I might take a short rifle if there's one going.
I'll take a short rifle.
Yeah.
Can I take a look at that blade that stabbed me and had the freezing effect?
Yeah, it's just a normal blade. It's just that the environment is so very cold. But you didn't take any extra damage for it.
Oh, okay.
That was just a crit.
Yeah, that was it.
So you pick it up. You're a bit curious because it hurt a lot more than you would expect it to. You pick it up and there's nothing special about it. It's just a very cold longsword.
Philly chokes it to the ground with disgust.
Can I pick up a long blade for the road?
Yep.
Can I take those combat knives?
There's only one combat knife, but yeah, you can take that.
Excellent.
Was it just light pistols, John?
It's just light pistol. I thought there was auto pistols, actually. It's just light pistol.
Cool, that's fine. I'll just take one for the road, unless anyone else needs it.
Nah, I'm good.
Excellent. Season 2.
Season 2.
So it begins.
Now it ends.
Knew it was coming.